This is Phantom Electric Ghost, and we are live on our Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook channels with Rin Esla and her drummer, Rick. Right?
How's it going?
Hi. How you guys doing? So you're I think we've had you on the podcast, the audio podcast before, but this is the first time we've had you on the video podcast, which we've been doing since last year. And so it's cool to have you on. And what we're going to do is before we get into it, we do have to push our sponsors. So you'll see below is Newsly, and Newsly is an iOS Android app that reads the news to you in a voice, so you don't have to actually read it on the web. And so if you use promo code GHOST2021, you get a free month of that. So just go out to your app store, look for Newsly, put in GHOST2021 to get 1 month free. So that's cool with that. And then the other thing, the other company we work with is out of Germany, and it's Double Jack Online. They are an online philanthropic lottery. You can play Keno, Powerball, and a percentage of the profits go to charity. Take your cell phone or smartphone and scan that. You can try it out. If you become a member of the group, you can actually become an influencer, and you get a percentage of everybody who plays, anybody who signs up with your connection number. So if you get, you'll get a, like a coupon code, and if you get other people to sign up, you get a percentage of every play of Keno and Powerball. It's a good way to get passive income. So, you know, I know artists are always looking for ways to make money, so that's something there. So now what we've got queued up is your new Spotify song. So this just came out, right? Alone?
Yeah.
So what we want to do is, before we get into the interview, we do like to have our audience actually listen or watch a YouTube video or listen to a song. So what we're going to do is, we're going to put you on mute. We're going to listen to the entire song of Alone, and then we can talk about it on the backside. So that's cool.
Oh yeah. Yep. Sounds good.
Okay. So we're going to play that right now.
Thank you.
So that was Alone, and we're back with Ren Esla and Rick. How are you guys doing?
Hi.
Doing all right. Doing all right.
So, like, I always like to ask about, like, the combination when multiple people are working on a project like that song. So did you both equally put into that song, or is it like one person did most of
it? I write the music.
You wrote the music, and did the drum part? You just, that's your drum part?
He just plays the drums live, but I write all that.
You write all the rest of it. So was that hard to put together given, like, COVID nowadays? Were you able to actually do that together in a studio, in your home studio, or how did you record it?
I do it at home in my room on a piece of crap laptop. So.
Well, that's cool. I mean, like you can see, I'm in my bedroom studio too, so everything gets done from home nowadays. I'm doing this from my home studio. So, it's interesting. So have you been able to do like online shows or physical shows at all? Or is everything just like doing on the web?
Well, right now, my focus isn't really shows. I mean, he's still trying to learn all like the new songs that I just wrote right now that we're going to be playing. We're kind of just focusing on like recording music and learning like what we already have that I just wrote.
That's cool. I mean, it's interesting today, what a lot of bands have to do. They work with other people, they do features, they do online festivals and stuff like that. But I mean, get into like the root of what I always like to get into, like, where did you start in terms of your music career? And if you've been on the show before, I have a typical set of questions. Yeah. So I always ask any artist I talk to, like, when did you first get into music? Like, what age did you decide that you wanted to do music?
Well, I mean, I've been doing music for as long as I can remember because my dad was a musician. So I was like really, really young, using like FL Studio when it first came out. Cool. So like that's just kind of what I've always used. So
did your dad encourage you to do music, or you found it like on your own?
Yeah, when I was younger, he definitely encouraged me to do music and stuff. I mean, he didn't like pressure me or anything like that. It wasn't like he was trying to like make me do that.
Make you go to school, like a conservatory or something.
Yeah. So it was just something that like I showed an interest in, and he kind of just encouraged it.
That's interesting. So when did you figure out that you had like a voice? Because some people start music and they play like a bar band or they do covers. But then it's like another step to actually go and like write your own music versus being like a studio musician or a classical musician or somebody who does, you know, covers all the time. Like, what made you feel like you wanted to have your own voice and write your own music?
I was never really into like doing covers or anything like that. I mean, I played like a Blink-182 song in fifth grade for a talent show. It was like the only cover I really did though. We play this song Coward by Warthog sometimes, but like not too much.
You have to really like a song to want to do it.
Yeah. If I really like an artist, like I feel kind of weird covering their music because like I'm not gonna do it the same way, like I'm not gonna do it as well, even if it's in like my own way. I feel like it's kind of like,
it seems like you have to have the confidence that if you take on somebody else's song, that you did a version that's actually worth, you know, people wanting to hear it from you. I think as a musician, like everybody kind of runs into that. Cause like, you know, my heroes are like, you know, Hendrix and Jimmy Page and Townsend and, you know, The Clash and, you know, all these people I like all jazz. So I'm like, I'm never going to be Miles Davis, right? I'm never going to be I'm never going to be Herbie Hancock. So if I try to do a Herbie Hancock song, am I like ever going to get close to where he could do? Probably not. But, you know, sometimes you feel like, oh, I want to try it because I love it so much. I put my spin on it, right? And I think as a musician, the more you get confident in your own capabilities, the more you choose certain tunes, you might do that. But I think it's interesting what makes a singer, songwriter, or an artist, a creator, go and take their own vision. Because not everybody is a creator, you know? And I think that's always interests me why I talk to singer, songwriters on this podcast, is because I kind of want to know what the motivation is. And how did you get into like Slug Noise? What was, is that something that you listen to other artists in that genre? And that's
no, it's kind of just like something that like I just say because like I can't. Me and my friends and like everyone I know, we have like a really hard time defining exactly what my genre is because okay. I kind of like jump back and forth. But like my punk songs don't sound like punk songs. Like they're not actually punk. My like my noise songs aren't like they don't sound like how like noise actually sounds. It's like I do like noise pop mixed with like I don't know, just like random stuff. Like that's not really a thing right now. So like I kind of my music sounds kind of weird compared to other artists. So I think
that's why I came up with the idea of expansive sound, because people were trying to pin me down to like, oh, you're an electronic musician, like you're a DJ. It's like, no, I play like I'm a keyboardist. I play analog Moogs and Rolands and Jupiters and stuff. So it's like people think about electronic music and they think like EDM, they think guys like CDJs. And like I actually still play the keys, right? And I have big modular units with all these CV wires. And you know, my heroes were like Yes and Emerson, Lake and Palmer and The Who, and like I like punk, like you know, Joy Division, like The Clash, like the Sex Pistols, like the Ramones. So I'm kind of coming from multiple areas because I like, you know, jazz outfits, like you know, Coltrane, Davis, Sun Ra. And so it's like there's a lot of stuff that you could say, well, what is that? It's like, well, it's whatever I want to do that day.
You know?
It's like I think it's like it's hard to get like people want to pin you into a genre. It's like, well, you're into, trance, or you're into like a dark wave, or you're into this. And it's like, well, you know, what if you want to do everything?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I bounce back and forth from genres. Like I had an R&B song for a while, but I stopped talking to the person that created the beat. So I kind of just scrapped it. But like I've done like all kinds of music and stuff like that at some point. So it's not like I have like a defining genre. Like some of my music fits under like an already existing genre. But like some of the music that I write, it's like it is kind of death rock, but it isn't. It is kind of electronica, but it isn't. So like I just do a lot of like delay effects and stuff like that to make it sound like it's glitching and stuff mainly.
So if you put out a record or an EP, it would be kind of eclectic. It would be a combination of all these different things. It wouldn't just be one type of sound. Or would you try to make an album that had a similar sound?
My new album that I'm working on right now, I have two songs that sound kind of like doom metal. And then I have two songs that sound more like I guess like death rock kind of. And then I have two songs that are more like poppy-ish. So like I do like pop songs and stuff like that too. So that's why I say like I'm all over the place with like the kind of music that I do.
Well, I think that's cool because, you know, I'm a child of the 70s. So I kind of grew up with like vinyl in albums. And we live in a Spotify playlist age where people have short attention spans and they only want 2-3 minute songs. And I came from like listening to Tommy and Quadrophenia and like Styx and Pink Floyd and these big rock operas and jazz songs that go 20 minutes long. It's like a different thing for me. Like I'm always trying to get people to listen to something longer than 3 minutes. And I was very happy to see that your song was 6 minutes because that is not typical. You know,
a lot of my slower songs are usually around like the 5 to 8 minute range, but all of like my harder songs, they usually range from like about 2 minutes to like 4 minutes.
Yeah, like a punk song, like if you listen to The Clash, everything's like 3-4 minutes, you know.
And it's like, just it's hard to like write like all that with how fast it goes, like it just zooms into the whole song. So like
if you listen to a Ramone. Yeah, Ramon songs are like
several
two.
Like people. I mean, several verses like in it, as opposed to just like two or three, you know.
Yeah, if you listen to like Black Flag or Husker Du or The Replacements or even The Clash and the Ramones, they're like 2 minute songs, like 1:50, 2:10. You know, that's what that era is. You know, Nirvana kind of stretched out with grunge, where you could take a punk song and make it like 4 or 5 minutes. But typical of kind of death metal punk is like shorter. But then like progressive stuff goes on a little bit more. So it's kind of like interesting with industrial stuff, like Nine Inch Nails stuff, will go longer. And I think it's just kind of whatever serves the song, you know. Sometimes you got a song, it's like 1.5 minutes. Sometimes you got a song, it's like 10 minutes because like it's whatever you were working on. And like, if your head is like, you got this concept, it's going to take that long to get to it. That's what it is. It's like, kind of like, you know, you never know Like when you're doing your creative process, do you sometimes I get ideas, they fully formed and I don't know where it came from. It came out of the ether. And it's like, I got the full thing. And I'm like, people ask, where'd that come from? I say, I don't know. I just got it. And other times, like you're sitting there, you're kind of tortured and you're like, this thing did not work. You know?
Yeah.
So, like in terms of when you write, do you like to just write what comes to you easily, or do you like to like kind of work on it and refine it?
Well, the way that I do it usually is I'll just kind of like, I'll be bored and I'll just write like a bass line, and then I add drums to that, and then I'll have like my husband do like a guitar to it usually. Mm-hmm. I used to do the guitar, but I kind of suck at guitar, so it's kind of cool because he only does metal music. So mm-hmm. like adding his kind of stuff to like my music is like kind of cool because like he uses like metal techniques and stuff like that. So it's not like conventional stuff for that kind of music that I do. So it makes it sound a little bit more unique than it already did.
So you can bring like an Iron Maiden or, you know, Judas Priest kind of feel into it, like, you know, heavy metal or metal. Yeah. There's a whole thing because a lot of metal is like classical based. You know, it's actually using mm-hmm. a lot of classical techniques. Where like, you know, blues rock, it's kind of, you know, Hendrixian, Allman Brothers type stuff. It's all like blues, Delta blues, blaze type stuff. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like, I grew up with like, you know, a lot of heavy Zeppelin kind of blues based, Stones based stuff. And then kind of got into Funkadelic a lot because I just was into Bernie Worrell and Bootsy. Like it just is a foundational thing. So who are your role models? Like in terms of the artist, you know, because I know your father was into stuff, but who did you listen to that kind of formed where you are as a musician?
Well, like Bjork was like a big thing. So like all of my like electronica music kind of like is influenced by that, like all the instrumentals. Mm-hmm. My drums kind of by Joy Division. I don't know. I don't really have like someone specific that I based like my drums off of or anything. What do you think?
Interpol. I always hear Interpol and the drums that so put Interpol together. I'm just like, oh yeah, this sounds like some of the earlier stuff or something like that.
I really like Interpol. That's my favorite band.
So when you do like your drum arrangements on your DAW or you use drum machines, you tend to go with like that type of sound. That's where you're picking up.
Yeah, I like to do stuff like on the offbeats and stuff and have like weird kind of like patterns that like go together, but like they shouldn't, you know?
Yeah. I like to kind of mess things up because it was like, I kind of take my cue from progressive rockers. Like I was watching this documentary of Peter Gabriel, right? And Peter Gabriel, people don't know, he was a drummer. You know, Phil Collins was the drummer in Genesis, but Peter had been too at one point. He's always just known as the lead singer. And he's very avant-garde. But he was working on So, like his big solo record, and he had this really awesome studio drummer. And he had the guy put together, like, I don't know, all 100 different tapes of this one song. And they couldn't decide what they wanted. So he just went and started splicing all the tapes and just said, well, I'm just going to mix. He just one night, said, I'm just going to mix it up. And he just put it together kind of haphazard. He said, well, that's it. And it's kind of, that's kind of like this art school kind of progressive rock type of way of doing stuff that I was like always like really enamored with. Like I would read about like what Emerson, Lake and Palmer did and Yes did and Genesis did. And I'm like, wow, yeah, I like that. And so, but yeah, I think it's kind of like, you know, you go for like not trying to do what somebody else did. You're trying to find what's going to serve the song. And if you're like, he's just like, I'm trying to find something that's going to give this thing like that special thing. And you don't always want to clone what you've heard before. You want to try something different. So you tend to experiment. That's what I find. So you like to experiment in your music then?
Yeah. Usually like when I write like the drums and stuff too, like I'll do I'll just click like a basic kind of thing. And then I'll just add random shit in random spots. I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss, but then in random spots.
Yeah, you
spots.
Can do whatever you, yeah, we're cool.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think I love like taking something and like running it through weird effects. Like, you know, you take a bunch of things that were like not wet in terms of like effects, and then suddenly you're running through a space echo, and then you're running through like something that's going to warp it, you know. And then a lot of stuff with my stuff, it's all like CV, so I'll, you know, controlled voltage. So I'll take like something and run it through a Moog filter and then like do like on a Moog you can go like negative voltage and you go positive voltage. Yeah. So basically it can like make something go upside down or twist it around. So when you run it through it, you can like rip it up. And it does a lot of weird stuff if you just have all these different analog processors can do really strange things to your voice. They can do strange things to your drums. They can really kind of warp it. And, you know, that's kind of like, it's like a special sauce. It's like, I this thing's down straight. It's kind of like what the Edge used to do, you know, from U2. You take a, like a very simple guitar part and then run it through like 12 processors. And then it's like, it's a very simple part, but once he runs it through all the processing, it turns into something like, well, I didn't even know that it was that simple. You know what I mean? But the, like the core of it is very simple, but once he runs it through all his chain, it just totally changed it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like whenever my husband writes guitar parts, it never sounds the same as when he recorded it. I'll like chop it up into a bunch of pieces and then like take out parts and then like copy and paste like a bunch of parts and it'll like glitch out and stuff. So like even for Alone, like the guitar that he wrote like a whole thing for the entire song, but like we didn't, me and like my friends and stuff like that, we didn't really like the way that it sounded. It sounded like the guitar overpowered the synth that's in it. So okay. I just kind of chopped it up and threw that at the very end when like the music gets all chaotic and stuff like that.
Well, I think that's what I like about like independent artists that were willing to take chances and to look at it. Things I look at music a lot of times. The Hendrix was quoted in the Beatles producer George Martin was quoted with this term called sound painting. So like when Hendrix wrote Electric Ladyland, people were saying like they came to him and was like, you know, what are you doing here? You've got all these like birds and noises and all these weird soundscape things. He's almost like doing synth stuff, but he's doing it on a guitar before synths were even really around. And he's like, it's a sound painting. They asked him, like, what do you mean? It's like, I'm using the sound to color the world. You know, Hendrix would come up with all these strange like statements because he's kind of cosmic. But George Martin said the same thing with the Beatles. He's like, I could record the Beatles like they were in Berlin and they could sound like a bar band. Or I could do like what I did with Sgt. Pepper's and I'd use the studio and create like sound paintings. And that's basically what Sgt. Pepper's is like, a sound painting, because he had been working on Peter Sellers' comedy records and he used all these techniques with like orchestras and tape loops and overdubs for the comedy record because it was like a production. And the Beatles actually liked the Peter Sellers records that George Martin had done. And then when they were working on Sgt. Pepper's, they said, hey, what if we take these techniques that you did on these Peter Sellers records and use them for a rock band? And that's kind of how you get Sgt. Pepper's, because it's got all this stuff that normally rock bands didn't do that. They didn't go and take all these other techniques that were being done for like shows, TV shows and things like that, and actually put it on a record for a rock band. And I think that's why now with everybody's DAW, everybody can be like, you know, Hendrixian sounds paintings and George Martin type of production. You can go and do that yourself.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. One thing that like I really influences like the samples that I use and stuff like that is I really like Fiona Apple, and there's a song that she has, Werewolf, where at the very end there's like a bunch of kids like screaming and stuff like that. She said that when she like was recording it and stuff, she was like using like a tape recorder, and in the background her television was playing and like a bunch of people were screaming and all that stuff. And she was trying to, she like would walk around parks and stuff and would try to like get different people to scream into her recorder. And she said like none of it sounded right, but she found like a bunch of kids popping balloons at a park and they were all screaming and stuff like that. So she recorded that, and that's what's in her song.
Yeah, it's interesting. In the 70s and the late 60s, field recordings are all over a lot of rock. You know, you can, there's a bunch of Yes albums where the Yes actually went to a forest and taped the forest with a field recorder. And it starts like with like, you know, these sounds from the forest. And Pink Floyd's famous for going around and actually like interviewing people and having them saying kind of random glitchy things, you know, it's all over a lot of Pink Floyd work where they're saying, oh, eat your meat, but they'd love to just take these random recordings, and sometimes they had scripts they would give to people, and it's like, read this, and Roger Waters was like, hey, I got this idea, just read this, and we're gonna use it. And I think it's really cool when, you know, you do that. I think Radiohead does it sometimes too, that they'll take field recordings or weird recordings and just throw them into their Kid A and different things like that. But I just think it's interesting when you try to look at music like a painting, and that you have a palette of all these things you can layer. And a lot of things are like point in time. I'm not really so upset if I can't recreate what I did exactly when I go to do it live, because a lot of what I do, I'll just randomly do because I feel like it.
Yeah.
So if I go to play live, I'm just like, I could just run my sequencer and do exactly what I did, but most likely I'll just turn on my analog synth and make it do something different.
Yeah.
Because like, why? That's more fun than trying to replicate exactly what I did on the track.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Whenever I play stuff live, I have this tendency to record myself like twice. So I'll do like one track where I'm saying like every other line, and then the other one, it'll fill in, and I don't leave myself breathing spots. So I'll change some of the lyrics, or like leave like a word or two out and try to make it make sense, just because like I can't like breathe at all.
Yeah. It's like kind of like what somebody told me, like if you're going to take a horn or a woodwind and use a synth to replicate it, you got to remember to breathe.
Yeah. And whenever he like writes our drums and stuff like that, or whenever he plays our drums and stuff like that, he'll like rewrite it a little bit and make it sound like a little bit more like his sound and stuff like that, but it'll still sound like my stuff too. So like that's pretty cool. I really like when people play different stuff live, just because like you can listen to a recording if you want to hear it, you know. It's like, you want to hear something that's like unique to like your situation, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm as a kid, child of the 70s, I mean, I used to go see the Who and the Stones and the Allman Brothers. And, you know, we didn't want them to go play Eat a Peach exactly note for note, right? You know, we kind of would go see the Allmans because they're a jam band. And Dickie Betts and those guys would just go off, you know, and then, you know, Greg Allman on the Hammond B3, he's just kind of going off. He's not doing exactly what he did on the studio. Parliament Funkadelic, like Bootsy would just go off and start slap bassing something different than what's on the record. But that's what I expect, because, you know, that'd be boring for Bootsy to do exactly what he did. I would rather hear him, and I actually would go see him because I knew he was going to do something different.
You know?
And that's kind of like Prince. I mean, I would go see Prince, and Prince was famous for never doing his songs when he, you know, he'll do Purple Rain, but even when he did, he wouldn't do it the same way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If he did Kiss, it would never sound like the way it did on the record. He just wouldn't do it. And he could, but he's like, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And he could get away with it.
Yeah. One thing that I think is really cool about like him drumming for me specifically is that like whenever he plays, he does play something a little bit different, and it kind of like he'll add like a bunch more fills. Cause like when I record the drums, I'm using FL and I have like drum samples. So it's like computer doing the drums, it's not like a person, and I don't really have like the patience to make a bunch of different drum fills, so I kind of just like will make like one when like it's like leaving the verse to the chorus or something.
That's what happens if you listen to a lot of new wave bands like from the 80s, and they were using like Linn drum machines and 808s and 909s. Sometimes they weren't like that detailed in doing the fills. Like if you listen to like Joy Division New Order. Well, Joy Division really didn't use drum machines that much, but New Order did. They started to use them real heavy in the same band. But like, the drum programming initially is not that sophisticated, because they were like, okay, I'm not going to do a lot of fills. I'm going to keep it kind of like in this steady state, and this, you know, once in a while change it. And then later they get more dynamic and they start doing more, because the drum machines couldn't do it. Like some of them couldn't do a lot of fills. They just weren't able to do it.
Yeah.
You'd have to go and like manually record it on the tape and switch it around, which, you know, you can do, but some like it gets it's the same thing probably on the DAW. Like if you were doing an old school on a physical drum machine, you had to be sitting there changing the button while you're running the loop, and you're like, I don't feel like it.
You didn't do it.
That's always been really fun for me, kind of going in, because I mean, I generally play like blues rock and reggae on drums is like what I played outside of this. And so coming into this project, it was definitely a challenge. She writes some of the most, I don't know, it's complex, just barely off time kind of beat little thing that she does. And it throws me on a loop. So coming into it, I'm one, learning the song as it was recorded, but then throwing in little things, like she was saying, like even just fills, or the actual like velocity of the drums, how loud certain hits and certain parts are, throwing just little accents throughout the whole thing. And it's been a good experience for me, man. I mean, it's definitely opened me up as a drummer, and I'm just having fun with it, man.
Well, I think it's awesome when you're able to actually, like, if you're a singer-songwriter and you've been using like electronic drums, and then you actually get a real drummer. Because I've had different iterations of my band where I've actually had, you know, a bass player and a guitar player and a drummer, and everything was on 808s or Lynn drums and all these like electronic drums. And then, like I said, I had to tell the drummers, like, I don't want you to have to do exactly what I did. Like, just interpret it and stay in the same zone, and I'm cool with it, because like I did what I was able to do. But I'm sure,
that's how I do it. Basically, it's like, he doesn't have to play it exactly how I play it, as long as it has like the structure, like the basic, like kind of like vibe that it's supposed to have. I'm totally fine with him like changing stuff a little bit.
Well, I think that's the awesome thing. What happens when you actually build a band, right? Like if you get a bass player and he takes your line that you did in a DAW, a bass player is going to do stuff that you probably didn't do. Like they know what kinds of low techniques that are unique to the instrument. It's like a horn player. Like if you do a horn on a synth and you get a real saxophonist, he's going to do all kinds of stuff with his breath control and his reed control all the little subtleties of that instrument that you can't do on a keyboard, he's going to do. And so like, that's what you expect. It's like they're going to be able to enhance it, you know, is what you hope. Like you don't have to radically change it, but make it more real.
Yeah. One thing that like I wish, you know, because he'll rewrite like parts of my drums, and that's cool. But like my brother plays exactly what I wrote. And what I write is like, I'll write like very, very basic bass, because it's the one thing that's like consistent in my music. So like, you know, the guitar is doing a bunch of crazy stuff and the drum's doing a bunch of crazy stuff. Like it, I need something that's like consistent.
Stable. This day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm going to make his bass fretless soon, because all the music that I record, it has a fretless bass. So, like some of it's written like microtonal. So I kind of, I'm just going to rip the frets out of my brother's bass too. Cause like literally no bass I have has frets, and it's not going to sound the same.
Yeah. I think it's just interesting, how songs can develop. And like, so do you ever actually go with a producer and have them do anything to help change your music, or do you use everything self-produced?
I do everything. I record the music, I EQ the music, you know, I mix and master it. I do pretty much everything for it. But that's he's cool. Gonna start actually helping me write some drums, because now he kind of like, his sound in general when he plays drums now sounds like way different than it did like 2-3 years ago before he started playing for my band. So like he actually kind of has like almost like that mindset now, where he could probably write something that's very similar to what I write. So
I've tuned in a little bit.
Yeah. And my brother's going to start helping me write some bass parts too. So like, I'm trying to go in a direction more where like, it's still my music and it has the vibe that like I want, but it's like my brother, he didn't play bass before he joined my band. So everything that he plays and knows, it's from my music. So that's all he knows. So like, I'm sure pretty soon, you know, he's going to be able to help me write something that's like, actually like, it sounds like my music without like me having to have too much influence, just because I want it to start to be more of like a band thing, you know?
If you have a band, you'll still be Rin Esler, or you'll change it to like,
no, yeah, it's like how Marilyn Manson does it, where like the band is called Marilyn Manson, but he's Marilyn Manson, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's something like that.
Yeah. Cause you talked about how in your brief write up on, Spotify, you say it's a fictional character. So is Rin Esler like a fictional character?
It's like a stage thing, because like I write like really like if you read my lyrics, they're kind of like asshole-ish. Like they're really negative. I like to write really satirical stuff. So like if I write something about a murderer, then it would be like from the perspective of a murderer. If I write something about like just like someone who abuses, you know, their wife or whatever, someone who gets abused, you know, I write it from that perspective, not so like I write it from the monster's perspective, not so much the victim's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So all that, it's like I'm trying to give a really like negative kind of vibe to the Rin Esler thing, just kind of like an asshole-ish, like narcissistic kind of thing. I'm not really like that, but like
well, I think it's interesting. What I always try to talk to people, like when they're musicians, I believe every musician has like their stage persona. Mm-hmm. They have this other me. Like when I do the ghost, like I'm saying I'm a phantom, right? In some cases, I have a variation of myself called Josephine Electric, which is a voice coded female version of my own voice.
Yeah,
that I actually gave her a name, like Josephine. So when Josephine does the lead, you know, and then I use this phantom mask and it's LED and you can't tell who I am. Sometimes my voice is female, sometimes it's male. So when I do shows in New York, I have this phantom mask so I can go and do the female voices and the male voices.
That's really cool.
Because the idea of the ghost, well, it's a ghost. It's like a ghost to be male, to be female. And so I don't want to go out with a dress on, but I want to be able to do Josephine's voice. So I came up with the idea of just being a phantom with like a phantom mask and you can't really tell.
Yeah,
you know, really cool. Who that is. And I think that's like, I kind of got the ideas from like Bowie and Prince. Bo always did this kind of persona. Like, sometimes Prince was Bob George, sometimes he was Camille.
Yeah.
And then he'd wear like a fur coat and like heavy makeup and kind of be feminine. And then with Bob George, he'd be kind of like really hip hop and he changed how he was. And Bowie was the same thing, Vlad Insane and, you know, Ziggy. He would always come up with a new image of himself to fit whatever he was working on. And I think that is kind of cool. I think as an artist, musicians, I think we do a lot of theater. I think when we want to do it, I think it's cool when you have some theater in your music.
Yeah, definitely. I try to like be as like dramatic as possible. Like I'll write about something that like bothers me. And then I'll write it from the perspective of the person that's bothering me or the thing that's bothering me. And then I'll make it like overly dramatic. Like I have a song called Chemicals. It was based off of like some guy that had a thing for me, but it wasn't like I was friends with him. So it was like we were totally fine. You know, he didn't like cross any boundaries or anything like that. But I wrote a song from the perspective of Rin Esler where I just basically say that like I use people like that and that like stuff like that's sad to me, and then I like degrade myself in like a narcissistic way. Like I do it really weird. So like it's stuff that like I don't actually feel, you know, but it's based off of like it's very, very loosely based off of things in my life or things that like I feel strongly about.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because like people can kind of get confused because people wonder, is Lady Gaga that image that she puts up? Was that really the other her?
Yeah, right? See, I kind of want to look like a terrible person to everyone that doesn't know me. I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know why I like attention so much, like negative attention so much, but it's like it's like funny to me. It's like comedic to me. So like I really try to like make myself look as bad as possible. And then like in person, when people see me, they're like, you're not like that. Like,
yeah, it's kind of like, you know, Johnny Rotten from the Sex Pistols. He was like, I don't give a, you know, a flying F about anything. And he had this image and it was like totally anti-hero, total anti-everything.
I love that. I love that. I don't know why. It's just like,
I don't think he was really like that. You know, that was like over-exaggerated, you know?
Yeah. And it's like, there's one person that I really look up to and they're not a musician at all is Andy Kaufman.
Oh yeah, Andy Kaufman
like,
was
no one knows how he actually was, because everything that he was a character, every single thing. And one
he was like a method actor.
Yeah, one of his characters was like a huge asshole, which is an asshole all the time on stage, and people fucking hated him and like all that. Like I was just like, that'd be kind of cool, you know, if I got everyone to hate me, because then everyone would know me. It doesn't matter if they like me or not. Everyone knows me. I'm famous, so.
Well, I think Andy Kaufman, that was brilliant because he had this ability to be in character and he would be like, outside of his acting, he'd go into like the wrestling character he did. He's like,
and he would just go. It's cool because like no one knows how you are until they meet you. And like a lot of the people that listen to my music might not meet me, because I have a lot of people like all across the world on the internet that like I've made friends with, or that have like followed me on certain types of social media and stuff like that, that'll listen to my music and they have no idea how I am unless they like message me and they're like, hey, like, what's up? And you know, so I don't know.
I think it's good to have that separation, because like because if you go on stage and like there, you know, there's some old singer songwriters that would go on stage and they're like, okay, well, that's probably them, right? Because they were kind of just in blue jeans and just singing a song. And that's folk musicians tend to want not create a character. Mm-hmm. But then Bob Dylan is an example. Like he was out there in his blue jeans, but he seemed to create characters because his voice would change. Mm-hmm. If you listen to Dylan, his voice is very different from project to project. And it kind of, sometimes it'd be like Arlo Guthrie, somebody would be like Woody Guthrie. Sometimes it's weird, this weird nasal thing. Sometimes it's like Nashville Skyline, where he actually sang with Johnny Cash, like in a country way that's totally different than any other project. It doesn't sound like anything else he ever did. And it actually kind of shows he could sing at a singer level, but then he chose to like do this other stuff.
Yeah.
And it was almost like he's in character for everything he does.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. I don't think anyone else in my band really like has an interest in doing like characters or not. I don't know if you care about that stuff. Like I don't think my brother cares. My brother just does a bunch of crazy makeup. So we both just will be on stage looking how we be looking.
Well, but I think the lead singer is quite important for the lead singer to have that, you know, not that the whole band has to be like Kiss. Like, if you think about Kiss, it's like everybody's in character. But not everybody. I think
low-key he wants to be a villain because he's like the biggest Diamondbacks fan when we're on stage.
Oh, no.
Well, so do you think you'll be doing any live shows in 2022? Or are you still going to be doing them?
That's why he's learning all the stuff right now. I'm going to be like making like a few more new songs probably that we won't be playing for a while, but like he's learning all the new stuff that I wrote. Cause I write in bundles, I guess. I don't know how to explain it. Like I'll write like three or four songs in a row and they'll all sound similar. And then I'll stop for like a month or two. And then I'll write like three more songs. And then those ones will all sound similar. And like, so it's like, I just write in like spurts, essentially. That's the word I was looking for, spurts.
Yeah, I think as an artist, you get an idea and you put something down and then like I realize like, hey, if I pull off like half of this song and then actually go and redo it, I actually have a better song. And so I've done like things where I had like synthesized drums and then I brought in sample drums and then I kind of didn't want to know which one I wanted. And then one day I want to go with this one. And then I actually clone that song and use the other set.
Yeah.
And then they're both kind of in the same vein, but one of them has different lyrics or it has different this. And then sometimes I go on SoundCloud and I see, well, which one do the fans like? And one of them suddenly gets like thousands of plays and this one got like five. I said, well, I guess that one didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
I make people listen to my music. I'm like, I kind of suck. I'll like be like talking to someone, be like, hey, you know, I wrote a song, by the way, you know, I don't know if you checked it out or not, but I'll post it like a million times and I'll be like, dude, listen to my music. Like I'll spam it. I'll be like, dude, if you guys don't listen to my music, like I'm just going to keep spamming it. Like there's a certain point where I won't care. You guys can stop listening to it, but like, you got to at least get it to like right here first. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep bugging you until you listen to my music.
Yeah, I think it's just interesting, you know, how the net works. I think I love Instagram as a musician because I think it's like the place where you can do, you know, clips of your videos and, you know, you can get people to actually engage because there seem to be so many musicians on Instagram. I mean, like everybody I interviewed since 2018, I pretty much found them on Instagram.
Yeah.
Like every emerging artist I have ever talked to, I found them on Instagram. And it just seems to be a better place than some of the other places you could go. And I think it's very friendly for musicians for us to be on that platform because it allows us to connect, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's how you found me a few years ago, actually. I think you just like you found me out of the blue and you're just like, hey, do you want to be interviewed? And I was all
That's my strategy. Usually what happens is somebody likes something I post and then I see they're a musician and I say, hey, I got a podcast. You want to come on? I've been using that since 2018 and I get 2-3 guests a week. Just doing that. I don't talk to managers. I don't talk to anybody. And I've been able to get people who have managers, that are bigger than just an emerging artist. Just because I say, hey, you know, I'm a musician. I just want to talk to you from that perspective. I'm not trying to do anything, the hype machine. I just want to dig you because I like what you're doing and I want to have a conversation. And it's just honest, you know, I don't try to pitch it from some kind of salesperson point of view. Like, but I just think that these days, a lot of good music, since the pandemic, I've been talking to a lot of bands that have been able to kind of really refine their art. And I was just wondering, have you been able to kind of take this time where maybe you would have been touring and really focus on your songwriting? Do you find that that's been something that you've been able to do?
Yeah. The thing is like, I can't write music super consecutively. Otherwise I burn myself out and it just feels like a job. It feels like a chore more than like a, something that I want to do, like a dream or anything like that. I write songs in like a day. I'll write like 2 or 3 songs in a day. That's how, Alone was written in a day. All my songs I think have been written in a day. Maybe I'll add like a few things to it or whatever. Like I mix master it after that, but like writing it itself, recording it, like I record it as I'm writing it just so I can remember it. And I don't have anyone else to like memorize like the bass or anything like that, like right there when I'm writing it. So I'll write like 2 or 3 songs in the span of like a week or something. Like I'll just kind of choose when I want to write one. And then I won't write anything for like a few months.
Well, I think it's interesting because I like to, in my home studio, because I have everything here, I have a tendency to just kind of write all the time. And it is like almost everything is done in that session.
Yeah.
And it's like, I kind of look at it like the sound painting idea. Like if I'm going to do my work, if that's what it was at the point, like I don't like to do a lot of takes. I like to be kind of like I'm kind of from like I've watched a lot of documentaries and I saw one with Elton John. I saw some with like Tom Petty. I saw with a bunch of artists and they're saying, you know what? It's like the third, second take, sometimes the first take are the ones I end up using. Mm-hmm. That if I'm in a studio with a producer and I start doing 100 takes, then I know something's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like it tends to work when it's like closer to the original intent. And when you start going back and double think, you know, rethinking what you did, then you lose what the intention was. I find that the original work tends to be what I wanted to do.
If I don't like the song within like 20 minutes of me writing it, then I just throw the whole thing away and I write another one. And I'll do that sometimes where I'll just write like 2 or 3 different things and I just keep throwing it away until I find something. I'm like, fine, I'll write this.
Yeah, cause I think it's like, it's weird. I think like there's a lot of people feel like I started with poetry and there's a whole idea of the muse. Like if you listen to Victorian poets and all the old like Blake and Wordsworth and all these guys, they used to talk to us like this kind of universal like thing that would artists kind of pull into. And I think any artist kind of, you're able to tap into like what's inside you and what's outside of you. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of pull all your references, all the things you're into, your feelings, and then take your skill as a musician and an artist and craft that into something. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the idea, like there's something in the ether, there's something in the universe and you can pick up on it. And you as an artist can sometimes feel like things come to you in complete pieces because like you somehow are in tune with something. I mean, it's kind of cosmic, but I do feel a lot of musicians I've talked to, they do say it's like things sometimes come to me as full ideas. Yeah. And it just, I don't know why it is. I have to like not second guess it and just let it happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You want to say anything? No.
I mean, that I do a little bit of songwriting myself outside of this, and for the most part, I found that kind of just getting everything in time, recording everything piece by piece, part by part, in time as I'm writing it, it kind of helps me keep from like second guessing myself. You know what I mean? Coming back a couple weeks later, not in this exact same mindset and something like that. And I feel like it, you know, you can come sometimes like psych yourself out of the consistency of a vibe in a certain piece, you know? So being able to, like how she does it, recording everything in time, it keeps the song very consistent with the overall tone and styling that she's going for. And like when you were on a big doom kick for a little bit, and it's, I think what, 4 songs in 3 days she put out, and it was all consistent, had its variations, but still stayed very consistent. And it's kind of cool. I like that. Like the whole band kind of shares that kind of mindset when it comes to writing and recording.
Yeah.
That's very like old school. Cause like in the '70s bands would just like the whole band would be in the studio.
Right. Yeah. Right.
A lot of stuff was live recorded. Like some of the best Fleetwood Mac stuff, some of the best Who stuff, like a lot of stuff for like the Who's like Who's Next was recorded in a theater in London because they were trying to do a rock opera. They were trying to do a follow-up to Tommy. So like Who's Next is this thing called Lifehouse that never became a rock opera. And they actually had this theater. And a lot of the Who's Next songs were done live in this theater. And the reason the Who's Next feels as powerful as it is because the whole band is just there putting down new songs live on the stage. And they went and overdubbed them and became Who's Next. But it has this power that because it's very immediate, you know, because it feels honest because it's so like the band was like really in tune with each other and they really got it right. And a lot of times if you listen to like the Cream and the Allman Brothers and a lot of classic rock, it's because they did it that way. You know, it has a lot of power if you don't like obsess about trying to make it perfect.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like
I
was kind of like, I've noticed that in 2 Deep Purple albums. You got Deep Purple in Rock, and then a couple of years later is when they started doing like individual tracks and kind of splitting things up. So in Fireball, you kind of get a different styling to it. You know what I mean? They go to like their first 2 albums and everything, first 2 releases, and everything sounds like a live show almost. You know what I mean? Yeah. The same kind of vibe in the song. And then once you get to like Fireball and beyond, you can definitely hear it's definitely a studio setting, you know, and you can tell like it's I don't know. It's all together. It all sounds great. It's one of my favorite bands, but I don't know. There is a different vibe to like immediate writing and recording and piecing everything out and being very methodical about it.
Yeah, they end up becoming like more of like a technician and less of a feel thing. It's like there's some pieces of work that I'm into jazz where like, you know, like Sunrise, a really weird expressionist jazz outfit. And they did a lot of fusion kind of recording live of their pieces. And they were just like, you know, this first, second take, and that's it. That's what it is. And, and it's like, you know, I love that kind of feel. It's like Funkadelic. Like when Funkadelic would put things down, it's like 8 minutes, but it's like, it was live recorded with like, you know, 10 people, you know, playing all in the studio. And it's like, there's something about that. It's like a Grateful Dead type of thing. You know, you get this feel and it feels honest. And it, you know, and I understand when you go and do something like, you know, like Bruce Springsteen, the Born to Run, and you're sitting there working on it for 6 months and you layer it and you layer it and you layer it. And it's like, okay, I get that. There's something about crafting it like that. Mm-hmm. But there's also something about this being more kind of punk aesthetic and doing it like the Clash or the Ramones.
Something a little more spontaneous.
Yeah. It's great. Like all things are cool. Like you can get a 5-star record that was done one way or the other way. And like Rolling Stone will say, well, that's a 5-star record. Yeah. But it's kind of like you think about Keith Richards, right? Can you really put Keith Richards into a DAW and try to time the BPM the way he plays? Not really, because Keith Richards is kind of like, he's like the ultimate like kind of feel guy. He just kind of like not really running to the rhythm. It's a good thing their drummer is really tight, because he is kind of like all over the place, but it is, that's the Stones sound, is the fact that Keith is kind of like, that's way, the way he is. That's how he does his chord structures. He just kind of very loose, very jammy, and there's something cool about that.
Oh yeah. I guess it comes like where the artist feels most at home, you know. And like me, I'm more of a jamming kind of guy, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So most of the time I do most of my progress is while the whole band's together practicing, mm-hmm. is where I make the most progress on learning and writing, you know, little parts and stuff like that.
So what do you feel like when this next project is actually coming out? What do you have a target?
So originally I was supposed to release Alone on the 1st and then Holograms on the 3rd and then the new album on February 1st. But I haven't had time to finish Holograms or the motivation. So I'm probably going to release everything a month later. So Holograms will probably come out in a few weeks after I get Alone some traction. And then I'll probably have my album come out on like March 1st, probably. But well, I'll be releasing songs like on SoundCloud. Like as soon as I write a song, I release it on SoundCloud. It's usually just like bass and drums or something, because it takes me forever to get my husband to write guitar because he's in another band. But yeah, so I probably will be releasing my new songs that actually I think I have some of the songs from the new album, if not all of them, on Spotify already. They're just not like finished.
Demos.
Yeah, they're basically demos, but it's mainly like bass or drums, or it's like a really rough track of like the vocals and guitar.
That's cool. So I mean, what one thing we like to do with artists is like, if you want to do, we've done like album release episodes, so mm-hmm. like when you have like the full project ready to go and you want to kind of time it so when it's coming out, we could actually do an episode where we talk about like the whole record.
Okay.
And we've done that. We're really into doing that.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
We're also doing, which I'm not sure if you're into because you're still working, but we're doing a festival with the podcast guest that we've had on the show. Mm-hmm. February 11th through the 13th, we've got like maybe like 18 acts already playing like 20, 30 minute sets from like, we call it the Peg Bedroom Producer Festival. We did one in July, mm-hmm. From July 16th through the 18th. And we're doing this February 11th through the 13th. Now, this is the first time we're doing, you know, this is the second one we've done. We're going to do another one in July. So mm-hmm. if you're like more ready to do it, like in July, we could do it then. But people do like unplugged performances from wherever they are for like 20, 30 minutes. And we push them through the same way we do this podcast.
Okay. Cool.
Well, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
So let us know if you're ready. We are kind of packed into the schedule. There's some spots open. So if you, we can talk offline if you, I have an interest in doing it, and let me know, and then we can set it up.
Yeah, that'd be dope.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So I think we hit the hour-long spot. We always, time flies when we're talking to cool people. And we want to let everybody know this will be on Spotify as a video podcast. We're in their beta program. So we'll have that up within an hour. So your fans will be able to actually watch you not only on YouTube, Twitch and Facebook, but on Spotify itself,
which is pretty
cool. We'll set that up.
All right.
We'll give you the link as soon as it's ready. But thank you, everybody. Please check out the link I have here. That's the Spotify link. I've kept it kind of stable so you can't click on it, but on the program itself, when you go to the podcast on Spotify and you go to it on Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook, that link will be clickable. So I do encourage people to go out to the links that we have, favorite and subscribe to the artist that we talk to. And in this case, Rin Essela, please subscribe and favorite and playlist. And that's how you help artists out. And we thank you for listening to the program. We hope to have you on again.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.